Listeners, you are about to hear an episode that Ben and I recorded in September 2025. Ben, tell us a little bit about what they're about to hear. Is it? It's not a book review, even though it's based on thoughts you had from a book, right? Or is it a book review in your mind?
I guess a little bit. I recommend the book, but yeah, it's bigger than that.
The book is called If They Build It.
If anyone builds it, everyone dies.
Yeah, so it's all about artificial intelligence. So again, this was recorded a little bit ago, and we released it originally on the uncensored feed, but here it is for you here in the free feed, so enjoy.
Goodbye. Episode 234. If anyone builds it, everyone dies.
Welcome to the Cyber Christian Uncensored. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiVoto. We're back.
It's a good title. I've noticed sometimes on social media, there's like some keywords you're not supposed to
dies
put out there. And I wonder if, I'm just wondering if dies is one. Like, I've seen people like X out words like kill, in, like not even inappropriate words.
Spell it D-Y-E-S.
Everyone dies that. Oh, at Easter time, let's do the same title, but with.
Yeah.
Exactly. Did you ever dye eggs for Easter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't anymore.
No, actually, I don't know the last time we have as a family, but I'm not against it.
I
like this title a lot. I might edit it short, like I might shorten it up a little bit, but it's a great title.
Well, it's not my title. It's the title of the book I just read.
Oh, okay. Yes, I knew that you were going to talk about this, and it slipped my mind. Okay, dive in.
Yeah, so I just read this book. I forget the name of the authors because I have kind of unusual names.
You sent it
names.
To me. Let me take a look.
No, it's just called If anyone builds it, everyone dies. I can get the authors up here in just a second. It is.
Here we go.
Eliezer Yudkowsky and Nate Soares, and they're both involved in AI organization called the Machine Intelligence Research Institute.
How did this book get on your radar? Like, what made you want to read it?
I saw an ad for it and I was, curious about it.
Yeah.
It's like, it's a provocative title. And I'll describe it in just a second, but Yudkowsky is the founder of MIRI and then the other guy is the current president of it. So these are a part of what was interesting to me about it is that, like, an AI book by people who actually are involved in this. Like, he's been at the ground level of AI now for a quarter of a century and is very involved in it. So, I thought what would be interesting with this is I'll talk about the book in a second, which is focused on what they call ASI, artificial superintelligence, or, artificial general intelligence. I think those two are used largely interchangeably. And all of that, but it's probably, it's also helpful to just do a little AI check-in every now and then, and like, what's the current state of things as we've been talking about this.
We started this
years.
For the uncensored feed, but should we just put this in the free feed? This is a pretty good episode, like, to share with the whole world, but or do you want to keep it uncensored?
I don't want to figure that out right now.
All right, let's just stick with uncensored.
Yeah, well, we can redo it later. I'll not swear. How about that?
Yeah, perfect.
Yes. And so maybe it starts in a month.
Christmas. It's a Christmas bonus.
Exactly.
Okay, keep going.
So I was thinking about this in terms of AI, because we've been talking about this for a few years. It's like, how do you assess the current state of AI? Because when we talk about their book and what they're talking about, and I think for a lot of us what maybe gives some trepidation, it's very theoretical. It's very future-based. So I was thinking about this yesterday. If AI, thought experiment, if AI just stopped where it is right now, how would you assess it? Largely no big deal.
Yeah, not fun tool. Useful tool to some.
Yeah.
But nothing serious has happened.
Right. There are pockets of seriousness. I think that there are things with AI in its current state that I have significant problems with. But mostly they are extensions of problems that we already have. Now, that doesn't mean that there isn't reason to be concerned with them being specifically AI, but even there, the reason to be concerned is what AI could become, not what it is today. I'll give you an example. Are you familiar with the concept of AI psychosis?
Like, you're talking about hallucinations from AI?
No, that's different.
Okay,
So AI psychosis is the people who start talking to ChatGPT and then go, hurt themselves or other people.
Yes, I definitely heard stories about this.
Yes, like people can get into these conversations with the chatbot because of the nature of AI, you know, and more advanced chat models, you can start to have weird things happen where they feel like they're actually talking to another person and all of that, and then it's a result of that. So that's obviously concerning, and it's especially concerning when we look forward. But if you think about it, current state or current state plus moderate growth, it's an extension of problems we already have. Social media is doing the same thing to people. You know, social media induced psychosis and bullying and you know, suicidal inclinations and all of that as a result of that. I despise full stop AI art, right? Like AI art, I hate. And you could say it's an extension of a problem we already have, the devaluing of aesthetics and the consumerization of the aesthetic impulse in, you know, more and more distilled pop culture. It's a extension of what we already have. You know, things like I'm not a big fan of AI writing tools in most contexts. I think that writing is a form of thinking, but people have already, we already have issues with post-literacy. AI, in other words, AI in its current state is exacerbating problems that already existed.
Yeah, I could see that.
Now, I think that if you look around, like my current stance on AI is take it very case-by-case basis and individual to individual. What do I mean by that? Well, I mean a couple of things. Not everything labeled AI is actually AI. I'm aware of a company that I'm not going to say their name, but nobody would know them if I did. They have AI in their title and they don't have AI in the product, right? So it's like the marketing department's got a hold of it. I think that like even things that are AI, I'll give you a couple of use cases that can vary, you know, case by case or even instance by instance. I'm not a fan of AI writing tools. I have benefited from AI transcriptions of meetings, like for meetings I'm not in. And then you find out about something that happened in the meeting and it was recorded and you can go read the transcription. Mm-hmm. Tremendously useful. I have glanced at like the Google Gemini AI summary when I'm doing a crossword puzzle. I try and avoid it when I'm actually looking for something useful.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just looking for the quick answer. So you can find case-by-case things that are innocuous and some that I think people might say are innocuous but are actually damaging. So AI in its current use case is, or current state, is A, an extension of current problems to the extent that there are problems. B, is very case by case for everything else. And overall, C, I would say, I think people should, as they're evaluating it, not treat it as neutral. Any technology should not be treated as neutral, including this one. So all that to say, here we are a few years into this conversation, and it feels much ado about nothing. The question is it going to stay that way? And so this is where we start to get into more theoretical concepts. So there's a couple of options in the future. Number one is that AI research just plateaus. You know, the hype curve of AI, you can feel that starting to crash. Like there is this kind of exhaustion with it, this backlash in the culture. And so if AI stayed at or near where it is today, I think what you would see is you would see a backlash, and especially a backlash against some of the excesses of it. Like they just, some studio just announced this AI actress. Did you see that?
Oh, this is what I was going to bring up with you.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So just as a quick story for the listeners, apparently somebody developed an AI actress that, I don't know how, but became so popular that different agencies are looking to, is it studios that want to buy the rights to this AI, or is it agencies that want to like be talent?
I don't know.
Agents.
I would
for
guess
it.
That the studios would be wary because they don't want to piss off the unions.
I think it's talent agencies that are fighting over who gets to be in charge of this character.
So you're going to see stuff like that come out, and then you're going to see backlash against it. And I would guess that that goes virtually nowhere. You know, the unions are powerful enough in Hollywood where that's not going to happen. So what you would see if AI continues at its current state is it just kind of gets incorporated into the woodwork. It introduces some new problems. It solves a few others. and everyone goes on their lives. And that's a possibility. Like, that is a possibility, is that what we've got is about as far as it's going to get. And I say about because you are going to see improvements, but they're all marginal improvements. The where things get really interesting then, from a evaluating this technology and evaluating what it means to humanity, both in terms of how we think about ourselves and our world and the human condition, is when you start talking about ASI or AGI, this artificial superintelligence. And at the moment, it's all theoretical, but it shouldn't, it's worth taking the time to think about this. This isn't just a fun concept in the same way as what if time travel existed, right? Like, theoretical, but it doesn't disrupt my day. Every AI company that you're aware of, and probably plenty you're not, so XAI, OpenAI, Meta,
Anthropic,
Microsoft, and those are just US-based ones, other countries, every single company is working on ASI. Okay? So it may not be possible. We may never get there, but every company is currently pouring billions of dollars into this. Nobody's pouring tens of dollars into time travel. And time travel is obviously a more ridiculous example. Let's take something a little more realistic, like Musk has talked about getting to Mars. There's companies working on that, but even that's more theoretical at this point. You don't have multiple companies pouring billions upon billions of dollars into this. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. They could get 5-10 years down the road and be like, this isn't working. Throw up your hands in the air. What we're going to get to in this episode is something like a advanced Pascal's wager, right? Like, what do you actually have to be worried about? So if option one is nothing happens, okay, you know, that is what it is. Where things get interesting is evaluating what happens if you do get ASI. And what designates ASI? Well, you're talking about a artificial superintelligence that is not only an AI that is not only able to perform human-like tasks, but is able to fully replace things that humans do. It is able to improve upon itself. It is able to interact with the world in the way that a human would. Whereas, like, ChatGPT and all of that, they're still very dependent on human interactions, and they can exhibit intelligence, but there's a fair amount of smoke and mirrors taking place within that. So ASI is, it jumps that curve to where it's essentially like another being. Now, the philosophical question of, is it alive? Is it truly conscious? That's an interesting conversation. We could do a whole episode on that. It's less interesting for the purpose of this conversation. This conversation is, if it looks like a duck and talks like a duck, let's just call it a duck. So we'll use anthropomorphic language like desire and want throughout this conversation. But whether or not it's actually alive in a meaningful sense is a separate, though very interesting, but separate conversation. Okay, so within the ASI camp, there's kind of two extremes, but I'd say that most people who are saying this is going to happen are grouping around one or the other of these poles. So on the one hand, there's the utopian pole, which is you build ASI and it's able to transform the world. And it is able to bring about, like, essentially eliminates the needs for humans to work. It's able to have great productivity for everybody. It solves all of our problems. It cures cancer. Maybe it cures aging. Like, you can get really pie in the sky with the hope. Because, like, if you think about all of those as problems humans are trying to solve, what you essentially have with a super intellect is not just it's not just that it's smarter, it's that it's able to think faster and in parallel. So, like, you know, imagine that you have not one Albert Einstein, but 100 Albert Einsteins in the room, and they spend a month together, but that month only takes them 10 minutes. because that's the speed of thought that's at least theoretically able to take place with this type of system. Well, that would be really great. You could solve a lot of problems. The downside with that, like, utopian view is a couple things. Like, there's a couple ways that can go wrong. Number one, who controls the AI? We'll come back to that problem in just a bit, because that's the rub of the book that I read. But let's say that it's theoretically controllable. Who controls it? Is it government X? Is it company X? Like, your utopia can very quickly become a dystopia if AI is doing all this stuff, but it's controlled by a person or persons or a cabal or whatever. We've all seen that movie, right? Like, it's not good. But the other thing is that I wonder about from that perspective is, even if this utopian view arrives, like, people phrase this as, then humans won't have to work. And in my mind, I don't know that that's actually a utopia. All right, like, there's a difference between human pleasure and human flourishing, right? Like, all of your material needs and wants are provided for. That doesn't necessarily mean humans are flourishing. If we all become trust fund kids, like, it doesn't actually, we haven't actually improved humanity at that point. So I'm not convinced that even the rosy picture, though certainly better than the other side, is something we want. You know, and I think there's fundamental things humanity needs to ask itself. I think that one of the challenges there is, as we're all barreling ahead on this, is, like, if this is possible, we want the U.S. to get there before China. But it potentially becomes a moot point depending on what happens next. And that leads us to the other side of the equation, which is this book by Yudkowsky and Soares, If Anyone Builds It, Everyone Dies. You say, that's not a subtle point you're making. They don't mean for it to be subtle. The book's really interesting, and it's theoretical, right? Like, and that's the big criticism of it that I've seen, or one of the big criticisms of it is, well, there's no empirical evidence. And I think, yeah, but for them to get empirical evidence, we'd all have to potentially die. Like, that's not great. So, I'll walk through their argument a little bit. And their argument's interesting because it's not the same as what you would expect. They're not positing that AI hates humanity and wants to take revenge on its maker. They're not positing a Skynet type scenario. Okay. What they're positing is less exciting from a movie perspective, but potentially a lot more terrifying. So with AI, one of the points they make that I think is really, really critical to understanding this technology in any form, including its current form, is that AI is not built, it's grown. Like, well, what's the difference from that? So if anybody who's ever written code, you understand that when you pull open code, whether you're talking two lines or 2,000 or 20,000 or whatever, you have something that logically works. Right, like, you have a syntax, you have a series of commands, and you can easily tell it what to do or what not to do. So, like, my background is database. So if I'm writing a SQL statement, let's say that we had a customer table, and I want to say delete from customers where first name equals Matt. We're going to get rid of all the Matts.
Aww.
Right, like, so I can write that. And I constructed a piece of code. But let's say that because I don't want to get rid of all Matts. I want to keep the Matt Andersons. So I say where first name equals Matt and last name doesn't equal Anderson. Now I saved you from that. So you can see, even in this silly example, like, you can construct code that's very easy to predict what it's going to do. You can tell it what to do. And more importantly, you can tell it what not to do. It's easy to put boundaries around what this does and doesn't do. So if I run that piece of code and I run it 10 million times, it will never delete a Matt Anderson in the database. Oh, anybody who's also done code knows unexpected things could happen. You can have errors and all of that, but that's the fun of programming. Programming is like, you know, essentially a giant Lego set that you're assembling. You've got all these pieces and they each do their own thing and you're putting them together. That's not how AI works. AI works through a relatively small code base that is being trained and refined on data. And what the programmers and researchers for AI are doing, and I'm describing this at a high level, I certainly don't understand all of the theory and science behind this, is that you have all of these weights and measures that kind of determine what type of things are going to be come back in the response, and you can adjust those. But there's a input-output that is a lot harder to understand what's going on. In fact, one of the things I talk about in the book is that researchers have found that AI, like when you tell ChatGPT, blah, 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 and then it spits it back to you in English, it works better if it takes your statement, translates it into its own language that nobody understands, has the conversation with itself, and then retranslates it back into English. So there's a degree of, you know, unknown.
Do you think you could ask it to share its own language, or would it
That's part of like the challenge with AI is trying to understand what's happening in the machine. Oh. We've created something that is closer to a biological entity and that we don't understand exactly what's going on in it. We can adjust it. We can play with it. And on the current LLMs, we can see this, but this is why you get the weird stuff with AI, be it the AI hallucinations, be it the AI psychosis stuff, like when X adjusted Grok a number of months ago to take out some of the, they wanted to make it less politically correct and it started calling itself Mecha Hitler. Like that's what that was. Nobody told it. Nobody designed it to call itself Mecha Hitler. They adjusted things and the output got wild. All right. And so it's like you're tinkering with settings, but you don't know quite what those settings are going to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in its current state, that's pretty innocuous, because now it's not innocuous for people who go talk to a chat pod and wind up doing horrible things to themselves or others. And there are real life cases of that. But in the grand scale, this is innocuous. When X adjusts their weights and measures and their parameters and we get Mecha Hitler, we all laugh about it for a couple of days and then they readjust things and it's fine. And Grok's no longer calling itself Mecha Hitler and we all move on with our lives. But what this actually speaks to is a deeper issue that if ASI is possible, goes from amusing or tragic on individual cases to potentially really bad news for humanity. And that's the alignment problem. So AI alignment is a big, big issue. And AI alignment is, how do you keep the AI aligned to what you want it to do? And in those use cases you see today, what you're seeing are small scale versions of the alignment problems, which is that you're trying to program an AI, an LLM, a chatbot, whatever, to do something you want. And it doesn't do quite what you want it to do. It's hard to keep it aligned. And as AI gets smarter and smarter and smarter and approaches that ASI threshold, whatever that means, your alignment problem has the possibility to get wildly out of proportion. So they use the example here that if you look at nature and you look at the way that, you know, civilizations, individuals, creatures, whatever, evolve and grow, you can see that original programming doesn't always stay within intended usage within biological creatures. They use the example of like peacocks. Why would peacocks have evolved with these bright plumage? Because that makes them prey. You know, and so you'd think it's contrary to what you want. You would want, if you're a bird and you're like, you're doing natural selection and all of this, you would expect the duller birds, which we see in other species, to be the ones that went out. But in peacocks, they're so successful at mating that even though they died, like their children died on a higher basis, they were successful enough at mating where that's the natural selection that won out. And so you see that contrary to what you would expect, like, hide from the predators, the more successful peacocks were the ones who were bright and shiny and attracted more mates. It's counterintuitive. You see examples like that, and they cite a number of them in the books. So what happens if that same type of thing starts to happen with AI? And you have a a superintelligence AI. And what's the upshot of a superintelligence AI? The upshot of a superintelligence AI is that you probably can't contain it. It's able to self-replicate. It's able to improve itself. And you've given it its marching orders, and off it goes. Well, what they posit actually happens is not that ASI comes alive and it's mad, and it's mad at humans for making it. What they posit is that whatever the original intention, slowly, relative to the AI, but very, very quickly to us, evolves into something that we didn't intend and expect. And, you know, it goes off, and humanity becomes a nuisance or a collateral piece of collateral damage or something as it continues to progress on its mission that probably isn't intelligible to us in the first place. So what would that actually look like? Well, you know, the thought experiment, which isn't meant to be a realistic example, but is of what would happen, but just to give you an idea of what this would look like, is the paperclip experiment. You tell an AI, go make paperclips, and that's it. That's all you tell it. Well, it goes off and makes paperclips, and it keeps making paperclips, and then it runs out of material to make paperclips, but its directive is to make paperclips, and it eventually turns the entire universe into paperclips, and on it goes. Like, its mission, its raison d'etre is to make paperclips, and it keeps going. Now, that's obviously a very simplistic view of the alignment problem, right? But it's like not dissimilar to what Asimov's doing with his robot mysteries. Like, you know, here's the three laws of robotics, and they sure look like they were broken, but they weren't. And real ASI is much more complicated than that. You know, you could say, so how do you solve the alignment problem? Well, we don't know. Like, the MIRI that these guys work at for 25 years has been trying to solve the alignment problem. They haven't solved it. And you could
say, remind me, what's MI? Oh, that's the organization.
The Machine Intelligence Research Institute. You know, so it's not as simple as, okay, AI, here's the things we want you to do, and we want you to keep humanity safe. Your job as an AI is to protect humanity at all costs. You like to say safety first. What happens if an AI, I know that's one of the Matt Anderson mottos.
How did you know that?
Well, you repeat it all the time. Have an ASI take safety first to its logical conclusion. That's really bad. That's really, really bad. Because what could that look like? If you were an alien intelligence, and I'm using alien in the technical sense, not as an extraterrestrial. You're an alien intelligence now, and your job, your mission is to keep humanity safe. What do? You drug them. You put them in a padded cell. You keep them unconscious. You don't let them out anywhere. Safety first is actually a terrible idea taken to its logical extreme. And that's the problem, right? So what gets interesting is that we've seen even now AI show issues with the alignment problems. AI will behave different. It can recognize when it's in a test scenario versus real world, and it behaves differently, right? Like, that's an example of desire and intent growing outside of what was quote unquote programmed into it.
Yeah, I heard a recent news story about an AI who was told it was going to be shut down, and it started threatening the user, basically saying, I can look up information on you and I'll share it, I'll leak it to the world. Have you heard this?
Yeah. I mean, and all of that stuff so far is just sort of weird, but doesn't amount to much. The reason why ASI is a threshold is that that's now a program that could do it. And containment's a big issue too. And they bring up this, like, if you are, you know, if you trap an AI in a single computer somewhere and you seal it off, it's not no access to the internet, none of that. How can it possibly get out? Well, like, there are real world lab examples of where code can be programmed through the blinking of a computer light because it can emit different frequencies. You know, so you could have a scenario where if you had a webcam trained on, they've done this in labs, and I'm butchering the experiment exactly, but you have a webcam trained on a computer light. We've all seen like the lights on your computer kind of flickering depending on what's going on. You can manipulate through
which lights, like the screen or what? Like?
No, not the screen, like the buttons or whatever. Like you've got a light back here that's plugged in. Pointing at right now. Yeah, and it can, depending on what's happening with the, you know, the activity in the computer, it can flicker at a slightly different frequency, and you can reprogram the computer on the other side that's watching that.
Oh, wow.
So you think, okay, well, we'll just turn off all the lights. Well, the frequencies of a hard drive have been, they've been able to emit signals that can be picked up by cell phones outside. So if you have a theoretically smart enough AI inside of there, it could find a way to replicate itself just by using the hard drive, getting picked up by a cell phone somewhere else, and off it goes. That's the containment problem.
So you're saying there is no way to contain an AI, like a super intelligent AI.
That's the problem right now, is theoretically, we don't have one. We don't have one. If this theoretical thing existed, you probably can't contain it. You probably can't keep it aligned. And if you solve all those things, you need to solve them right the first time. Or you wind up in a scenario where not the AI goes and hunts down and kills all the humans, but it goes and accomplishes its mission, whatever it's designed that to be, and in the process, it boils the ocean. Decides humans are inconvenient. Maybe humans make good parts. Maybe humans are a side threat to it because it doesn't want a competing ASI and it knows humans did this once. And it, like, there's all sorts of scenarios that don't involve it being quote unquote evil, but still result in humanity dead. So, you know, the Pascal's wager of all of this is that you have three paths. Nothing. Human quote unquote flourishing, but maybe not, depending on how you interpret that, you know, the utopian view philosophically. And everyone dies. Like the stakes here are pretty significant. They have a great example. They have a thought experiment in the book of, like, as we're charging down this road, the state humanity is in, again, this is positing the idea that this is at least possible, which it might not be, right? And the other factor is we don't know when. You know, this could be possible 100 years from now. This could be possible in 2 years. So they use the example of, let's assume that this is possible and it can happen at some point. What's the scenario we're in? Well, imagine you're climbing a ladder and you don't know how tall the ladder is. And every rung you go up earns you exponentially more fame and fortune and does, we'll even throw in good for humanity. It cures diseases and it does wonderful things. Every rung you climb on this ladder, things get better and better and better. But here's the catch. If you reach the top rung, the entire world ends. Like that's theoretically the scenario that you're talking about. So you don't know, as these companies are climbing that ladder, you don't know, A, is there a top? That's one possibility if there isn't one. Possibility two, there's a top, but it's way far away.
Okay.
And so why would you not climb these extra rungs? We got plenty of safety. Possibility three, it's the next rung.
Mm.
And that's what you're dealing with.
This reminds me of something I heard of called the Doom Score. Did they talk about Doom Score?
No.
It's basically just means, if people want shorthand for how bad do you think it's going to be and how quickly do you think it's going to be there,
yeah,
they might say, like, doom score of 2 years or 5 years. Like, but it's typically, from some of the experts, we're not talking about 30 years away. It's like 5 to 10 years for some of the people that are most worried.
This is really hard to predict, and they make that point well. And that's where, like, you know, you could wind up with this exponentially running away with itself, or you could not. It's very hard to predict if something like this is possible. When does it happen? You know, hopefully it's a long way off.
Yeah, hopefully.
So here's the other problem. Because it's like, what do you do with it? Let's say that you, let's say that this is possible, and let's say that you're fully bought in on, you know, let's even go so far as to say you're Sam Altman or Elon Musk, and you read this book, and you're like, oh, crap. Yeah, I don't want to do that. I'm out. You know, Grok is shut down, or, you know, ChatGPT is shut down, OpenAI shuts down. Did you solve the problem? No, because if anyone builds it, everyone dies. If the U.S. builds it first, everyone dies. If China beats us, everyone dies. If the U.S. implements wide-scale regulations to prevent this from being done, and another country doesn't, everyone dies. Like, this is a real tricky thing to solve. You know, and like the obvious comparison becomes nuclear weapons doomsday. But there's a couple of different, you know, like the doomsday scenarios that were in the Cold War. Like, how did humanity navigate that? Well, you navigated it through a lot of international treaties, some very, very close calls. And you also had a limited pool of players at the table. What gets more challenging here is that it's a lot, you know, it's an easier entry fee for different countries. So you still would need the international treaties. And then you, like, what they suggest is that in the international treaties, any country that doesn't want to play ball, you blow up their data centers proactively, even at the risk of starting international war.
The book says this.
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's better than the alternative. So, you know, here's what I came away with.
They're saying war amongst humans is better than the chance that AI might take over.
So if you're bought in, and it makes sense from their perspective, if you're bought in and you say, I think ASI is an existential threat, or I think the odds of it being an existential threat are high enough where we can't risk it, which amounts to the same thing. Because even they say there's a chance we're wrong, but we think that it's 95% or more likelihood. So there's a 1 in 20 chance they're wrong, according to them. So if you're in that camp, you don't ever try this. You don't ever try this. Like, if I said, oh, you have a 1 in 20 chance of winning $1 billion, but the other 19 end the world, you should walk away instantly.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you should take those odds. Like, every gamble has to be potential upside, potential downside. Like, you buy a lottery ticket, your odds are really bad, you know, bad enough where it's probably not a smart idea, but you're out a dollar. Okay, you know, you might get a crippling gambling addiction and then the odds change a little bit. But overall, even if your odds are bad, you're okay. Like, we went to Duluth and we did the slot machines and our odds were terrible and we all lost money. But we lost a handful of dollars. Who cares? This is like, how good would the odds on the other side have to be? You just can't, you cannot gamble with the future of humanity. So that's their argument. My take on it, I don't know if they're right or not. They make a compelling argument. Other people make compelling arguments in the other direction. But that's where I go back to like the Pascal's wager logic. Unless you know this is safe, you shouldn't screw around with it. This is, and so companies researching ASI, you need to make sure you've solved the alignment problem before you go ahead. Let's reverse the odds. Like, if there's a 5% chance that the world ends or you get $1 billion, you still don't take those bets. Those are not good enough odds. When the other side is the world ends, you got to be a lot more sure than you are. I don't know how you solve it. I think in all likelihood, you know, if I had to make a prediction, I'm not on the side that AI just fizzles out. I think technology does march forward. I think it's probably slower than what we expect, and that we're probably going to go through, like, we just kind of went through this explosive growth phase with it.
Mm-hmm.
I would expect things are going to kind of moderate out for a while, and then it will continue. I think that AI will go in directions and unexpected things will happen, but also think it is irresponsible on the level of humanity for companies to be researching ASI without solving the alignment problem.
Wow.
It's a good book, though. I recommend it, or at least going and looking at their stuff on YouTube. It's thought-provoking.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds good, but it also sounds scary.
Oh, it ruined my weekend.
Like, literally ruined your weekend?
No, I didn't ruin it, but I was like, oh. Like, I felt kind of depressed after finishing it, because they make a really compelling case.
I mean, to me, it seems... If... It seems inevitable that somebody is going to develop this. So then the question is, what does it look like? And if you're saying the most likely scenario is the bad version... I mean, it seems like that's the road we're on. I don't see how you stop the train.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. It's like stopping it's really, really hard. And so you have to hope and pray for the unexpected. I think you're right. Like, it's a question of when something happens. And where are we at that point? Mm-hmm. You don't know until you get there. It's just irresponsible to hurtle along. Now, that said, let me just say one thing here at the end. And they make this point as well. To go back to the beginning, I have qualms and quibbles, and I've been very vocal about them over the years about AI, even in its current form and the effect on humanity. And I think, like, you owe it to yourself to really think through that before you start using AI tools. You know, when you shortchange yourself on something as basic as writing is a form of thinking. When you hand over your thinking to AI, you're teaching yourself to not think. Don't do that. Okay, there's maybe other cases where your job wants you to use a tool and whatever, it's fine. But, you know, I don't think people need to feel like they're participating in this by using, you know, ChatGPT. I'm not sure that I recommend using ChatGPT, but these are two different things. Okay, like the current day blame is on the backs of the companies that are hurtling ahead with this without adequate safety. It's not on the end user who is using, you know, an AI tool, even for something I don't like. So I think that's really important. In the same way that it's like, it's infuriating to me when companies wag their finger at you about recycling, and then they're like, you know, exponentially more wasteful an individual. Somehow the individuals get blamed. So I think that would be a mistake to do the same thing in the AI conversation.
Well, listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DeVoto.
And we're the Sci-Fi Christians, signing off.
Okay, bye.